So cloud support engineering is basically, it's a little bit above just regular, basically it's beyond the sysadmin stuff. It's so the people that I'm talking to, they are the sysadmins or the system engineers at their companies, and they're experiencing problems. And the problems could be as small as, you know, IAM permissions all the way down to, you know, throttling, or they're getting an error and it's a new error and I'm trying to reproduce it. I would say it's not, it does have the title support, but you don't do their job for you. We have very, very strict guidelines on what we can and cannot do.
All right, y'all, what's going on? Let's see. All right, we're back with another episode of the Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD, man. Got a good episode for y'all today, man. Miss Miosha, she's here. Actually, we're both from the same state. She's from the south of the state. I'm from the north part of it. There's a lot of contention between if we're part of Louisiana or not. I like to say we are. They like to say we're not. But we're definitely going to get into it today, man. We're going to talk about the cloud, talking about kind of making it out of Louisiana. What's it like being a cloud support engineer, and how has that transition been for her over the last 5 years? And yeah, so without further ado, I'm about to bring her up and we're going to get this show started. But if you are in the chat, please make sure you hit the like button. It really helps everybody on YouTube know that I'm live right now. And on the re-listen to this, please make sure you go ahead and leave us a review on this podcast episode. All right. Hey, what's going on?
Hello. Hello, everyone.
So I've been thinking about like an icebreaker the whole day. And I was trying to make one unique to us, I guess, because now that I think about it, Mardi Gras break is about to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Louisiana. So we can start it off like, you know, I was going to ask you about king cake or not king cake, but I just say, like, what are your, I would say, like, your favorite, like, you could say, like, Cajun fragrances, or, I mean, not fragrances, I'm sorry, dishes or favorite, like, desserts or whatever. We'll start off like that, talking about that, since, you know, y'all do have that rich history down there and all that good food.
Yeah. Yeah, I will just say that New Orleans is a superior place in Louisiana. It's the only place in Louisiana that exists. I don't know about the rest of the state. My favorite dish would definitely be, gumbo. Come on. There's nothing better than gumbo. I do prefer chicken and sausage gumbo. And there's also... It's weird because once I got outside of New Orleans, I tried other stuff and I kind of started taking a liking to boudin balls. They're kind of, you know, boudin and boudin balls, like they're decent. And as far as desserts, you know, we don't really do desserts like that unless it's a cake or king cake, of course. And with king cake, I like it plain. I don't like it with all the extra, like, I think I saw something with like strawberry and cream and all that. I just, you know, stick to the regular king cake, nothing special. Like maybe the cinnamon sugar is okay, but you know, nothing too crazy.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, it went to a college till I actually experienced, like, oh, we out of school for Mardi Gras, because they didn't do that for us in elementary school. We weren't out for Mardi Gras, but college is when that happened. So I feel like that was pretty cool. But I'm going ahead and let you introduce yourself for our listeners, and we're going to get this episode started.
Of course, of course. Hello, everyone. My name is Miosha Wilkes. I am from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I currently live on the West Coast. I am a cloud support engineer for a company that primarily has AWS technologies. And so as a cloud support engineer, I support things like Cloud Indoor, Disaster Recovery, EC2 Image Builder, EC2 for Windows, which does include, like, you know, SQL Server on EC2 Windows, Systems Manager, AWS Systems Manager, which is a huge, huge service, probably my favorite service. VM import, export, application and migration services and stuff like that. Those, I would say, and disaster recovery. Elastic Disaster Recovery Service is also another big one.
That's cool. You got your little elevator pitch down. So I like to do this thing like where we go to the beginning of time and kind of like, you know, what made you be interested in tech and IT and kind of like, you know, for us being in the South, that's something they don't talk about a lot. It's, you know, the Saints, LSU, everything besides getting into a STEM field, unless you like doing nursing or something like that, they're not really teaching us about like tech. So how did you decide that you want to do something IT related being from New Orleans, Louisiana?
So initially even growing up as a kid, I'd always been very like technical and hands-on. I like to take things apart. I still like to do that even as an adult. But I will be honest, I went to school for mechanical engineering. IT was not in the top of my list. I didn't know what IT was. And then I had issues with paying for school, like most people do. I could not afford to continue my degree in mechanical engineering. So I had a 75% complete degree. And I went to the local community college and I was like, hey, I need an education. Like, I'm not the type that can go out and just start a business and kind of just let things go like that. So I know that I could shine as long as I have something like that backing me. And so I remember the lady was like, okay, so we have all these degrees. She's like, we've got, you did engineering. Maybe aerotech would be good for you. And I was like, I don't think so. No. And then, she talked to me about nursing, which is also another big one. Talked to me about engineering technology, which I had already decided. I didn't want to work in the plants. I didn't want to work in oil. And then she was like, so we have this little program called, computer programming. And we have computer networking. And I was like, okay, so computer programming, how about a no on that one? Because I'd already done that kind of stuff in engineering and I wasn't too fond of it. I was most like, I really liked building things with my hands. And I was like, okay, computer networking. Like, I didn't know what it was, had never heard of it. She was telling me it's IT and all this. And I was just kind of like, I don't know what IT is, but I felt like she was getting fed up with me because I wasn't interested in anything they had to offer. Like, but at the time, I was like, what, like in my early 20s, my entire life was physics and calculus every semester and engineering classes. So I didn't really have much of a personality outside of engineering. So I just kind of was like, all right, cool. And then after that, I started the degree and I remember telling someone like, hey, I'm in a computer degree and they're teaching me about computers. Like, we're taking apart computers and stuff. And I don't know what's going on, but it was really nice. And then after that, I kind of started to get into the industry. My first job was an internship at Calcasieu Parish School Board. Then after that, I realized there was no upward mobility. So I decided I'm going to apply to jobs outside of Louisiana because there wasn't anything there. There was nothing that I could really, there was no way for me to find a decent career as far as I knew in IT in Louisiana because there were no job openings. Like everyone was content in their job. So after that, I was like, I applied to jobs around the US and I applied to actually a job here on the West Coast. And oddly enough, they were like, couldn't you come out for an interview tomorrow? And I was like, I can't come out tomorrow, but I could come out the next day. These folks didn't know that I was still living in Louisiana, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to drive to Texas, hop on a flight, and then I'm going to show up like nothing. You know what I'm saying? And then after that, it was just kind of up from there. So in that same company, that was a casino. I went from help desk to, I had the title knock engineer, but I didn't really do very much knock work. I did more system engineering work, which, you know, I guess it is what it is with virtualization and Nutanix and all that kinds of stuff. Then after that, of course, pandemic hit. I worked at a great little startup that dealt with the payment card industry, which was super interesting. They do great work there. But I was like, okay, this is cool, but I don't know how much this aligns with what I want to do and if it's leaning into my strengths. And so then after that, I applied and I got the cloud support engineering job. And I was like, okay, I strategically picked EC2 Windows. You can kind of pick what team you think you would be best suited for. And I figured EC2 Windows would be best for me because of my background with infrastructure versus like just, I don't know, security or networking or databases or something like that.
Man, you said a lot without me having to get out of here.
I forgot. I was like, wait, what was the question? I forgot everything.
Nah, you good, man. You said a lot, especially you're talking about the majors and you're talking about how you couldn't really see you having a career back home. It's kind of like everybody's story of leaving Louisiana. Like the people do have the jobs that you want or never leaving them because they know, like, you know, there's no other jobs for them to get. Right. So yeah. You're not going to be able to do any upward mobility. You'll just be one of the miserable people that you probably work with that are probably like 20 years your senior, always complaining or miserable all the time. And you probably saw that like I did. It's like, I'm about to go. I actually want you to talk a little bit about, like you said, you know, well, you system engineering, knock engineering, right? And I did not, I worked in a knock, and it was way easier than when I did help desk, to be honest. I didn't have to do anything but watch monitors all day. And when stuff went off, that's when I had to kind of make my calls. And funny enough that first company actually was in the payment card industry as well. They specifically were acquired by this company called Online Strategies, and they had this software that a lot of companies wanted to buy. And so they were actually acquired by a bigger company called Income, who owned them, but allowed them to pretty much operate as their own. So it's like we were with Income, but we were kind of also operating on our own, which is pretty cool. There's like, I kind of told some stories on my podcast about how I missed the alert, like my first weekend working by myself because I thought it was testing. But tell the viewers, they may not have heard the term system engineering. So what, in your definition, what is system engineering?
So system engineering could be more closely aligned with infrastructure engineering, in my opinion. So system engineers, they basically build the infrastructure that your environment lives on. So they're not exactly your sysadmins. So they're not... They're not like doing high level, I guess. So when I was sysadmin, I did a lot of IIS and SQL stuff. They're not really doing that kind of stuff. They're building servers. And I was on the break fix team. So we had an architecture team. We had architects that kind of built the stuff. And I was on a team that supported the breaking, fixing and everything like that. And so, we did a lot of monitoring of the environment, of course, but there was no really difference between what I was doing and the guy that was sitting next to me was doing, other than our titles. We all went to the data centers. Like, I've changed lots of memory on servers. I've changed lots of hard drives. I would say, depending upon the host or the blade, it would be either hot swappable or not. And of course, when it's not hot swappable, you kind of know the process that you have to do. It was building servers and just building out whatever needed to be built and supporting it. So I did a lot of the fixing of issues and stuff like that, building scripts. Yeah.
Dope. And then you said this, and I made sure to remember it. You said you took a role that didn't really align with what you were interested in. And this is something, as the Patreon people know, I just recently made a video about this. Matter of fact, let me get this ticker real quick. You know, people want to join a Patreon. So you can also attest to the feeling of you possibly have a good job that's paying you good money, but you don't like it. So it's like a honeymoon phase. Like, you know, you're getting good money the first couple of months, but then after that, like, I'm kind of dreading coming in here because I don't really like this. And this long term for me, this isn't going to work. Do you agree with that sentiment, or was it a little bit different for you from how you felt when you decided, hey, I think I want to do something else that I like that's going to line up with what I want to do in the next couple of years?
So I would say it was a little bit different for me, mostly because I didn't want to work with the casinos in the casinos. I didn't want to do casino work. Gotcha. Right. And so I told myself, I was like, okay, we're not doing casino stuff anymore. We're past that. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, missed the flight, don't want to do it again. Right. And so
and I'm sorry to interrupt. And when you say casino work, is it something that's specific that you would do only working in the casino of why you didn't want to?
No,
is it too easy for you or something, or what?
I wanted something new. So like, I just wanted something new. So like, granted, the work is great. You learn a ton. You support a lot of different stuff, meet a lot of different people and interact with a lot of different teams. But I wanted something new. Like I just was kind of like, okay, well, I've kind of done that already. So what else is there out there? There has to be more to this than just this one industry. Although it dominates the area that I live in, there has to be more. But the last company, it was a great company, but it was casino adjacent. And so I realized once I got into it, I was like, okay, they do amazing work here. But what is the career path for me here? And that was stuff that I started to think about. They were starting to get their migration going on and start moving to the cloud. But I just kept thinking, where am I going to be in a couple of years? Like, I'm a hard technical person. So that means that I have no desire to be like a project manager or product manager or owner or anything like that. I'm in the code or in the scripts and stuff like that. That's me. So that's kind of how I got into cloud support engineering. I was like, okay, so I'm not seeing a forward path, even though I love what we do here. It's great. I thought it was cutting edge. Like, they did really, really awesome work. But I just thought of my future and I couldn't see anything beyond the same title and the same position.
Okay. Well, first of all, is that company still doing good? I'm trying to see, like, are they close to going public? Because they seem like there's a cool company.
Yeah. So right before I left, they were doing amazing. Like, they had some, I know they were doing some not acquisitions. They were working in conjunction with some major players in the finance field. So that was fintech, basically. And they were working with major players in the finance field. They were working on expanding their technology into different countries, different types of gambling and different types of sports betting and stuff like that. And I know they had great investors. And yeah, so they were definitely, if you are into fintech, that company was definitely on the cutting edge of this payment card industry stuff. I'm not too sure if what they're doing right now, but I do, like, I'm still connected with them on LinkedIn and stuff like that. And I see that the things that they're doing, and it's, you know, if you're in that industry or whatever, it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome.
Dope. All right. So let's get into, you know, the good stuff that people came here for. So how would you explain what cloud support engineering is? And also, I would like you to elaborate on what a day in the life of a cloud support engineer looks like as well. So we could pretty much demystify the distinction of, or let's say, remove the negative connotation of support in anybody's role title, right?
Yeah.
You got a lot of negative connotations with support where people may just think it's either a lower level job or it's easy, or you're just talking to people on the phone all day, so you're not really doing anything. Those are the two questions. You know, what is cloud support engineering and what's a typical day-to-day for you like?
Yeah, so cloud support engineering is basically, it's a little bit above just regular, basically it's beyond the sysadmin stuff. It's so the people that I'm talking to, they are the sysadmins or system engineers at their companies, and they're experiencing problems. And the problems could be as small as, you know, IAM permissions, all the way down to, you know, throttling, or they're getting an error and it's a new error and I'm trying to reproduce it. I would say it's not, it does have the title support, but you don't do their job for you. We have very, very strict guidelines on what we can and cannot do. Like, we cannot write scripts for you. We cannot write code for you. We don't debug your scripts and your code for you. And we don't, like, we're not going to, like, my job specifically, I cannot build up your SQL servers and stuff like that. However, we do have managed services that'll do all of those things for you, but that's not my area. And I would say a typical day in the life is that I wake up, I log in, and I just go and pick up cases. I see what's out there and I go pick up cases. Right now, most of the things that I'm working on, even though there's an array of services, my most common thing outside of EC2 Windows, which is kind of like the default for like any case, would be Systems Manager and the Disaster Recovery the Disaster Recovery Services. And so I just pick up cases, I work them. I wait for people to respond to me. If they don't respond, I go pick up another case. And when my day is over, it's over. Sometimes I have to spend hours and hours replicating things. Sometimes I have to do a lot of research. Sometimes I have to write, like, I might have to write my own custom code to be able to do something. Like, I had to, like, more recently, I wrote, it wasn't really custom code. It was just something that I wrote for someone to be able to use Athena to query CloudTrail. Like, that was something that was very basic for me. It took me like 5 minutes because I've worked with SQL a ton. So writing a SQL query to query something else is not a lot of work. There's also no real obligation or requirement for me to work beyond my set schedule hours because the work is very demanding. It's not just like, you just can sit there and you don't get to cherry pick and pick easy things. Sometimes you might get an easy one where it takes you like 5-10 minutes. Then you might get something where someone's like, my entire environment is down, and you get on the call with them and like 5 hours later, we're finally getting it back online. It really depends. It does have the, you know, the word support in it, but it's a really good job. I wouldn't say it's necessarily entry level because there's the understanding that you have a basic understanding of systems as a whole. So you just kind of already understand how to make the connections, because someone may say, I can't connect to XYZ, but like I don't know. It's like you already know like how to ask them questions like, well, how is this connected? How does this work? Because sometimes people tell you the problem, but they don't give you all of the all of the information. So, yeah.
Yeah, you got to pull that out of them. And speaking of, so I'm glad you made the distinction of saying like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't consider it entry level, because we have these kind of contentious back and forth all the time about cybersecurity roles and what we would deem to be entry level and what we wouldn't deem to be entry level. And, you know, it's like I said, it's mixed feelings on that. You know, I think some roles are entry level, and I don't think some roles are entry level. Now, if a person has an exceptional talent to get there faster than others, then I would make a suggestion, you know, exception for that person because they're an exception to the rule. But with that being said, from your experience, let's talk about two things, right? This is the fun part because people like to want, they want to hear this stuff. What was the pay jump like going from like, like system engineer, not engineer, whatever, to cloud support engineer? Mm-hmm. And then we'll say like, also what's like a average, what would you expect an average cloud support engineer salary to be, you know, in the country?
Okay. So, like you meant the ramp up, like how was it different?
Like, for example, from when I left the NOC to going to my first SOC role, I think that was probably close to like a 30K increase.
Okay.
A year.
Mm-hmm. So I went, my last job, my title was system administrator. And so from there, I basically got, working at the company that I'm at now, I got like a $50,000 to $60,000 increase in my salary.
Boy, ain't no way, boy.
Yeah.
Boy, ain't no way, boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boy,
ain't
no way, boy.
Yeah. And that's my year one salary. I haven't really done a lot of research on how to calculate year two salary, so I don't really
know. All right, so watch this. I'm a veteran. A year one, somebody saying year one salary means somebody must have got some sign-on money.
Yeah, so I definitely did get a decent sign-on bonus. And then, so my year two will be, I think, stocks. I probably could have did my research on that, but I was just kind of like, well, you know, this money will help me go to school. So, yeah. But yeah.
Cool. That's dope. That's dope. Mm-hmm. All right. So what I've been teaching people is that, okay, well, we'll talk about two things, right? Cause somebody earlier asked about a certification, right? And me and you talked previously and how I was saying, well, I just recommend people to kind of sometimes get the basics of just learn what they may be interested in the cloud. That's why I suggest a cloud practitioner instead of just skipping it, going to solutions architect. So you learn about all these different services and you may want to specialize maybe in one service and really learn all you can about that to where that's like what you want to go into. What would you advise people to learn if they want to become a cloud support engineer?
I would say the basics of IT are super, super important. So like knowing your ports and your protocols, hold on. Knowing your ports and protocols, knowing how things connect and stuff like that, and just kind of knowing the lingo. Because a lot of times people, they'll say things to you that if you don't have that prior experience, you won't necessarily understand what they're talking about. So like when I first started, I think the first case I got was not even an EC2 Windows case. It was about Kinesis Data Stream. And I was like, I had to Google it. I had no clue. I'd never heard of Kinesis. Didn't even know how to spell it. I didn't know anything about it. But ultimately, the case had been going on for like about 30 days by the time it got routed to me. And the issue was a networking problem. That's all it was. And I was able to determine that because I asked clarifying questions. So I think the basic thing, and it's something that people kind of try to avoid, is networking. It's absolutely networking. And I would say my job also does include like Windows, even though that's in the title, but just knowing how Windows works and how certain services are going to interact. But the crux behind all of it is really, really networking. And of course, I guess I am being able to decipher that. Yeah.
I had to unmute myself. Yeah, no, it's just funny. Like, I'm asking these questions because I try to tell people, like, kind of no matter what the profession is, most of the foundations stay the same amongst probably most technical roles. Because we tell people that all the time. Hey, if you want to go in the cloud, you got to understand networking, at least on a foundational level. You have to. And like you said, like you've been saying some names. Like I said, oh yeah, I remember studying this. Like I have like a freaking notebook somewhere with like all these things written down from like when I took the cloud practitioner. As well as I didn't have as many notes when I did the AZ900 because it's kind of like the same info, but slightly different. But that's cool. And I actually been wanting to ask you this because I've been holding on to it while you've been saying disaster recovery. So I was in some interview, some interviews for some roles, right? And one of the roles was like an IR position that was going to be dealing with this company's cloud. They actually invented the one I was just talking about. I won't say invent it, but it's theirs. They own it. And some of the things they do, you know, we had some questions but we were interviewing. It was like, you know, what would you look for? And then like one of the things was like, you know, what you check and see, maybe somebody's account was compromised and they changed their billing and like all their subscriptions and stuff like went up. Like, have you dealt with that? Like somebody's billing and stuff was like jacked up and it's because they had like, you know, a threat actor in the wild and they got into their services and like just started like spinning up instances and stuff like that.
Yeah. So actually I have dealt with those kind of cases. So we have a customer service team and a billing team and they 100% deal with those issues. However, sometimes there's things that they can't get to. Maybe it's permissions related. I'm not really sure, but they'll ask us to research. And I've absolutely looked into cases where someone, right? It's not my job to determine that it was a threat actor. That's the security people's job. My job is to present the facts. And the facts are here. Someone spun up I think it's like that P3 something kind of instance.
Was it like one of those, so like, for example, when I worked in the SOC, right, we would get alerts if one of those, and this is because I've been removed from that role for like over a year. I think the instance might have been like G something or whatever.
Yeah, there's a couple instances.
Yeah, it was a couple instances we had in a lookup list in Splunk. And if they fired, we would just research and look into what's going on with that account and the user to see what's going on because we've seen certain instances being used for crypto mining.
Yes. And
so we would want to double check for that. Like, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, yeah. So I worked a case where someone had, like, they had spun up this huge instance on these people's account in an availability zone that they didn't use. So I basically, all I did was just present the facts. Like, here's the facts. This is what happened. This is what I can see. I can see that it was spun up using this account this time, blah, blah, blah. And then I pass that off because I can't. There's nothing I can do for the billing. I can't, you know, and also I don't really know what the security folks tell them. Like, I mean, I've told people, yeah, just put the instance in a stop state. Like, even when they're like, yeah, I've got ransomware on my instance. And I'm like, okay, yeah, let's put it in a stop state for right now until we can get someone to actually do the deep dive and maybe help you figure out what's going on. But I can help you rebuild it, but I cannot help you remove the ransomware, right? And it's kind of the same thing with that. Like, it happens to people, but, you know, we have the best practices on what you should do to secure your account, enable MFA, you know, do not reuse passwords, things like that. So,
yeah. No, I mean, it's just cool to talk to somebody that's on the other side of that and something that I was hoping to potentially do didn't kind of work out that way. But it's one of the things like interview tips, free game. When I interview, I always talk about how like my job is also enabling the business to keep on making money, but having an understanding of everything of what's going on. And so we just saw how what I've did in the past aligns with things that she does on the other end when these customers reach out to her. And it also aligns with like why it makes sense to have good rules for like your security team, like because we should be the first people like picking up on that before they have to call in to someone like her. We're like, hey, I don't know what's going on. What am I supposed to do today? Can you help me? I can help you to, you know, I can walk you to the top of the bridge. You got to ask somebody else to, you know, take you to through the bridge. But that's all I can do.
Yeah, so that happens a lot. Yeah, a lot of people sometimes I think there's a misunderstanding of what we actually are supposed to help them with. And it's like, you know, there's really, really hard lines in the sand. I cannot tell you to make a change. I can only say this is what will bring this to an end.
Dope. Let me see. I had this question right here. What is the most important lesson that you've learned so far throughout your career?
I would definitely say it's asking the right questions, because a lot of times
asking the wrong questions.
Yeah, right. I would say sometimes I get hit for asking too many questions, but sometimes I just feel like I need to really understand where they're coming from, because I don't always know what they're talking about or know what people are talking about. Because sometimes I think people just send you an error code and I'm like, what does this even mean? Like, this is Greek to me. I have no context. So asking clarifying questions, asking people what's going on and asking them, how is this supposed to work? Show me, and this is something I've been doing since help desk. Show me what you did to get here. Like, how did we get here? This is whatever. This is showing this error. Can you show me?
That. Was that Deborah Cox? How did you get here?
Nobody's supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that Deborah Cox? I don't know. Kelly Price? Somebody. I don't know. But yeah. One so like, them. I would just ask like.
It is Deborah Cox.
Oh, it's Deborah Cox. Okay. I would just be like, how did we get here? Can you show me what you would normally do? And explain to me, you know, like, show me how it failed. When did it fail? Is this the first time it happened? Also, that's another super important question. Has this ever happened before? It's the first time you're seeing this? Or like, because sometimes you just kind of like, sometimes people have never had access to something and they're like, well, it doesn't work. And it's like, well, it's never worked. That's the first thing. It's never worked because you don't have access to this. So, yeah.
That's a dope question. I know for me, coming from help desk, that's kind of how it was too. Like, it built upon good skills when it comes to doing cybersecurity as well, like asking those clarifying questions or getting the information from them. Like, when it comes to customers, sometimes they know what they were talking about. So I have to pull information from them purposely to make sure that they know what they're actually calling into me with, or saying, oh no, this is your actual issue.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Like, yeah. Stuff, like, I'm just having flashbacks now. Somebody calling me, or like, one time we put a front end message up, the TSA network went down. And so the lines blew up. Hey, I can't get on the internet. I can't check emails. Hey, newsflash, we can't either. The whole network is down.
Right. Yeah.
Or I can't receive emails, but I have all the storage. Okay. When the last time you received the email? It's been about a week. Okay. You got all these large attachments in here. That's why you can't receive nothing. Let's go ahead and set your archive folder up.
Right.
So definitely, I don't know what he say. Gabe says, asking the right questions will get you great results in ChatGPT. Hey, that's really facts though, because if you want to finesse ChatGPT, you have to know how to ask it in a certain way, and it will give you most of the time good results. Mm-hmm. One of my followers on LinkedIn, and this is not related to what we're talking about, but she wanted to ask ChatGPT about some information about Black History Month, and it gave her non-Black people to post about. And she was like, you know, these people aren't Black, and ChatGPT, and they was like, oops. So that's just a little disclaimer, like, you know, kind of still kind of verify what you're doing, because it could be a way, hey, somebody give OpenAI some money, say, okay, look, man, we're going to pay this money to make ChatGPT give people the wrong information, mess up everybody's environment for the people who just want to, like, just, you know, bet everything on that. So I think that's going to be a huge use case eventually. But that's not what we're talking about right now. Right. But that's a dope question. I know for me, what's been most important in my career is, like, you know, as my boy said on Drumline, staying ahead of the game. That's since 2018. That's what I've been doing, staying ahead of the game, trying to figure out, you know, what's the best way for me to always be successful in my career and always looking out for myself. I know it sounds selfish, but when you get on LinkedIn and you see all these people who really love their job got laid off because people at the top made bad decisions, you got to realize you got to stay ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this other question was, what's one thing about your job field or expertise that almost no one agrees with you about?
Oh, that's a good one.
I know that's a good one.
Wow. I would say, yeah, I would definitely, I would go back to the entry level thing. I think maybe the people that don't work cloud support have this misconception that it's just help desk, but of the cloud. And I'm like, yeah, in a way it is, but sometimes it is absolutely the farthest thing from that. Because the people that you're helping, like, they're not new to this. Yeah, like, you're not helping someone log into Windows for the first time. Like, these are people that have built up their own infrastructure, or they've built the infrastructure for their company. They're seniors at their company, and they didn't just get there because of time. They got there because they're qualified. So I understand, like, asking the base questions, but I don't think cloud support engineering is entry level at all. It's not something that you could just jump into, mostly because you have to at least have some kind of background. But I can only speak for EC2 Windows. I can't speak for, like, analytics or security or stuff like that, because Windows and, like, Linux, they're very specialized. They have, yeah, like, the things that you're doing are not necessarily as unique to the cloud vendor. Whereas, like, analytics, security, some of these other things, databases, they may be unique to a specific company, but some things, like Windows, is not unique to one particular company or the next. Like, you can do a lot on one thing. And then, of course, there's the proprietary services that, of course, you can dabble with.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this makes, like, a good post, like, about asking about cloud stuff. Cause, you know, it's always going to be mixed feelings, because I felt like, for the most part, and it's maybe getting streamlined now, but, like, 3 years ago, you would probably check 5 different cloud engineer roles or whatever, and it's no uniformity. It's always something different. So no one really could just tell you exactly how to get to the cloud. It's so different, mm-hmm, and more streamlined. So I think that's one of the things that they're working on right now.
Yeah.
Man, oh, I know which one is. This is a good one. I always ask them this one. So, how would your parents describe what you do for a living?
That I work with computers. Yeah.
Do they call you for everything computer related?
No. I don't open that door, unfortunately. I don't like to do a lot of troubleshooting outside of work. When I first started in IT, I was, like, helping everyone, because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm learning, I'm this, I'm that. But, like, now I'm just kind of like, I don't like to do it. I'm like, you can call the company, because I'm sorry, I can't help. Because I got that led to, like, me feeling like I was burning out when I was new to tech and doing all this extra stuff on the side and all that. It was not fun. No.
Yeah, like, and I get you too, because, like, back in the day when I did help desk, I didn't want to talk on the phone when I got off work.
Yeah.
I was taking 35, 40, 45, 50 calls sometimes. It just depends, you know. And when you got a girlfriend at the time, they get mad because they want to talk to you. I'm like, well, I don't feel like talking. I ain't mad at you, but I don't want to talk to nobody today. It's been one of them days. Like, text me.
Right.
And so it's kind of one of the things people don't talk to. Like, some people are made for that. That don't bother them. For me, I like people, but at the same time, I start getting irritated. I was like, I don't want to talk to nobody else. Especially when I was leaving the help desk, having a lady arguing me up and down. Like, that's the funny thing. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the people that call in need my help, and you arguing with me about like what your password and username is, and I'm telling you, I'm looking exactly what it is. And I hung up on them because that's by the time I had to put my 2 weeks in. I was like, oh, ain't nothing, what they gonna do to me? Fire me? I'm already gone.
Yeah. I don't listen when people argue with me. I'm going to say what I have to say. You can argue with yourself. I don't argue with people.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's no, I don't argue.
I had this other question for whatever reason. It's not written down, but what would be like three tools that you say that are indispensable to your job? So like they make you, I would say like they make your job easier. It don't have to be like the most complicated thing. It'd be something simple that's over the years have like made it easy to do your job.
Okay. I would say for this job specifically, I would say definitely the fact that I have, unfettered access to, a particular vendor's, environment and, like I can use my favorite tool in there is Session Manager. It's the console in the it's console into your instance from your browser. And that's by way of Systems Manager. Outside of AWS, I would say some type of PuTTY, some type of console command line tool. Like I just kind of use the basics. I don't like use anything very, I don't like to, how do I say this? Like I don't go out and use anything fancy. Like I have a Mac, so I use Terminal. I got PowerShell on Terminal. I've got everything that I really need on there. also back to the AWS console, Cloud Shell is so good when it's in a region that, you know, has it. It is really, really good because you don't have to, if you're trying to do something and you're trying to do it really, really quickly, you don't need to worry about configuring this, that, and the third. Cloud Shell is right there and it does exactly what you need. And yeah, I would, oh, and a text editor. Any kind of tech. I just use the basic one on Mac. I don't know what it's called. It's called. Okay. Yeah, I can't remember because I can't get a Notepad++ on my Mac, or at least I haven't tried.
Okay. Yeah, Notepad++ is like I have to anywhere I go. That's the first thing I go download. Notepad++.
Yeah.
In OneNote. All right. So, how is it? Or how has it been for you being a Black woman in tech? How has that been for you? I know, like, I used to tell people all the time, like, hey, when I was a help desk, a lot of us was Black on the help desk. But as I started moving up and up, the numbers started dwindling. And one of my most tweets I made a couple of years back actually, like, went, like, I don't know if it went semi-viral, but, like, a lot of people respected it and retweeted it because they kind of echo the same sentiments. So I want to know, like, from your POV, how's that been for you being a Black woman that's in tech?
So I would say when I worked at the casino, I had two really, really great mentors and they were both Black guys and they really kind of took me under their wing and they taught me a lot. They taught me everything I needed to know about systems because oddly enough, when I applied for the NOC engineering position, my interview was networking related. And then the first day they tell me, Miyoshi, you're going to start in systems. And I'm thinking that doesn't sound like routers and switches to me. I don't know. Because I went home and I was like, all right, I'm going to be messing with routers, switches, VLANs, all that kind of stuff. Because my first degree is computer networking. the job interview was computer networking. And so from there, I would say I've had more issues, I think, with just being a woman and being Black, because sometimes I have to realize that I have to school everything that I say. I have to make sure that, you know, I'm presenting myself in a way that does not come off as something negative towards other people. Because I've already, I had a job where I was called not a team player just because I didn't want to, I didn't want to work overtime. And I said that, and I got called not a team player. So it's like, you have to really, I realized I was really paying a lot of attention to how I was coming off, who I was talking to, like how I was dressing. It was a lot. And of course, code switching. But the fact that like I had those two Black mentors when I got to the knock role was, I would say, very imperative to, it was very critical to setting me up for success, because they really showed me a lot and they really pushed me to learn and to get better. And from there, I would say I've been kind of like, I've bounced around a little bit. For the most part, I haven't necessarily always been the only Black person. Sometimes I'm like the only Black woman. But it hasn't caused me as many problems with the people that I work with as it has with people that I don't work with. So sometimes I've had people say things like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Or can we get one of the guys in here that know what they're talking about? Because you don't know what's going on. More recently, I had someone say something to me like, you clearly don't know what's going on here. And we will all wait for you to catch up. And I was like, yo, that was mad disrespectful. But yeah, but, you know, I just don't let it get to me, because at the end of the day, it's not really my problem. Like, if you have a problem with me, take it up with somebody else, because I don't really know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't like. You know, you could tell people being mad, passive aggressive through text or whatever. Like, one thing office work do, passive aggressiveness goes down if you're in the same office with that person. And that's facts, because some people know, okay, you just talking because you halfway across the country. But if I was sitting right across from you, you wouldn't be typing nothing.
And, right. Exactly. And
I just asked that because I know, like, in my experience, like, I've noticed you guys go through BS crap. Like, that's why I always try to be a companion to you all. If, like, whether we're on the same team or we're adjacent, like, I always try to be the person to try to, like, speak up for you all and to tell people stuff. Like, for example, like, one time this dude at my old company would not give my coworker her access she needed. And she needed the access, and he could have gave it to her, and he was giving her a hard time. And I already knew why. The only constant was the fact that she was Black and she was a woman. That was the constant. And I was like, nah, that's not right. And I didn't, you know, go into, you know, I might have dealt with, like, maybe, honestly, I don't know. I'm going to have to take a step back and actually see. Like, I know I talked about years ago how I felt like I dealt with some things. It's me. It probably could have been me projecting or me feeling a way that I couldn't prove these things, or feeling like, hey, man, I didn't get these jobs back then because they didn't want to pay a Black dude whatever amount of money. That's just how I felt at the time, because, like, shit, you dressing up in suits for interviews and knowing you killing an interview, but you ain't getting hired. You like, hey, something ain't right.
Yeah.
So those are some of those things I experienced early on in my career. Now I think it's a little bit different of a climate. And for the most part, on a surface level, that's what we would say. Yeah. But I haven't really experienced, like, anything. I know also, like, from talking to women, it's like, y'all also, and this is not the thing to, like, kind of say this as, like, all Black women, but I know there is also some of this issues where it becomes a competition between, like, Black women that work in the office together instead of, like, uniformity. Like, I've noticed that, like, that thing where, like, I've seen a lot of women say, like, when if a Black woman or someone was their manager, like, they kind of, like, had a bad experience with it because they didn't want them to go past them and all type of like silly stuff. But that also happens on the men's side too. But I've heard that sentiment more so from women. And I was like, you know, that's something that has to change because like it's not, it's just a job, bro. Like, mm-hmm. who knows? That person that you beefing out with or holding back, you probably gonna be the reason they leave.
I haven't had that experience with other Black women in the workplace, but I will say I do think that it's a different, like I got into tech and the workforce slightly at a different era. So mm-hmm. like, I would say the people that I've worked with have been very forward. And for the most part, they've all been allies. Like I have not really worked directly with anybody that I was like, yo, this person's like, they out of pocket. Like, this is not okay. It's always been someone on the other side working for a different company that's interacting with the company that I'm working for. And yeah, I haven't. And honestly, on the technical side, because like I said, like I'm hard technical. So that means like I'm on the CLI or I'm in the logs, I'm, you know, in the infrastructure, stuff like that. I haven't really seen too many Black women. I haven't really encountered that many. But, you know, if they're out there, hit me up, of course. But yeah, like I haven't had that experience. It not even with other women. But like I said, I think it's because I got in at a different time. And like the whole idea of allyship is like a very big deal. Like it's to not make your coworkers feel excluded, no matter what background they are, no matter what, you know, what your preconceived notion about them is, you should not make them feel excluded, because excluded people have a hard time performing and reaching out for help in a job. And that's the worst possible thing, because you don't want the only Black female or Black woman that's worked at your company or in your department to then transfer and go somewhere else. And you're like, oh, well, she was good. I wonder why she left. I mean, she didn't really talk to us much. I wonder why. Like, it's.
Yeah. That's why. Around. Right. And that's why I tell a lot of people now, too, when we're talking or we're talking about these different interviews and stuff they can go on, it's like, why? And it's kind of like this, but culture fit, for the most part, is a big thing. If people want to see how you're going to mesh with the people in the culture. So if you can learn how to be a chameleon, you should have no issue with that. But everyone doesn't, you know how to do that. But mm-hmm. Nancy had a spicy question for you. AWS. Okay, we got three. So I won't make it lopsided. We got AWS, Azure, or GCP. What's your pick?
So, as far as my favorite one, I think there's a clear bias. I'm going to say AWS. But if I were to tell people, like, which cloud should they get into when they're studying, I would honestly probably say Azure. Because depending upon what your role is, there's like a 99% chance that you're going to run into Active Directory somewhere mm-hmm. at some point in your career. You're going to run into a company that may or may not have an Azure Active Directory sync from on-prem to the cloud. They may only work in Azure Active Directory. They may only have Active Directory on-prem. A lot of this stuff kind of depends on regulation and stuff like that. But like, I would say, I think Azure is a great starting point for people, even though I'm 100% biased towards AWS because I like Systems Manager a lot. It reminds me of SCCM, but like times 10. But Azure, because you can get the foundations down. And also based on my experience with Azure, there isn't as much of a learning curve once you kind of start working the basics of IT to going there. Like they don't name anything too crazy for you. They're not like services named after someone's cat. So the service names make sense for what they do. But yeah, my favorite service, my favorite cloud vendor is clearly going to be AWS because they have Systems Manager. Yeah.
Oh, I ain't gonna lie. I might change the title of this video saying AWS has Systems Manager. Just to
look, I'm a huge advocate for Systems Manager. Anytime I talk to someone and they're having a problem, like, is it managed by Systems Manager?
Right. All right. So here's like one of my last questions. Like, you know, what's one question you wish I asked you that I didn't ask?
Oh, you could have asked me about certs.
Man, I'm so tired of certs. That's why I probably didn't ask you. But
certs versus degrees. Let's start a debate.
Right. No, but the funny thing is somebody asked that in the chat and we were going to get to it in the end anyways. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about certs, especially related to getting into the cloud?
Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of the certs that I had prior to starting my cloud job that were, so I had the cloud practitioner before I started, but granted I did have A plus, Net plus, Security plus, you know, the CompTIA, whatever, right?
The Trinity.
The Trinity, yeah, the Holy Trinity. but like, I don't think the cloud, the certs really helped because my interview was very little on AWS. It was more on like, you know, infrastructure and stuff like that. So I don't think, I don't know if certs can really help you get a job other than getting you noticed because, you know, a lot of people have different desires. And sometimes if you have the right cert, maybe your resume will get picked out of the pile. I don't know, but yeah.
I figured I had a way to distinguish myself from everybody else on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it's the analogies that I use because they are just stuff that anybody can understand, right?
Right.
So we would say certs would be the equivalent to, and I'm gonna just say non-practical certs so people don't get their panties in a bunch. And these certs would be equivalent to whether it's on a man or a woman, attract the person you're interested in, right? You know, I'm from the South, so you see a girl from far away, he's like, oh, dang, she thick. So you notice, hey, she thick. So the recruiter say, okay, cool, they got the security plus and the cloud practitioner, and they working on CSSP. Then you start talking to them, realize, oh, man, they just got these certs, they don't know nothing.
Yeah,
you talk to the person, they ain't got no personality. This is a bird. What am I talking about? That's what I would equate certs to at this current point. Mm-hmm. I'm a career coach, as everybody knows. So I work with people who have certifications but can't answer some questions sometimes, which isn't their fault necessarily because they don't have the experience in it. And that's why I lean towards learning skills and taking those skills, coupling them together to make meaningful projects, versus just going out there and studying a month and getting a cert and thinking you're going to get paid a huge salary. That's why I advocate against that. And let me shout this person out real quick. Shout out to Network Your Future for the $20 super chat. Much love and respect and salute to you both. It's definitely a vibe up here. I appreciate it. I told everybody last year I'm going live like 2 times a week now. The schedule may change pretty soon. I'll definitely let everybody know about that. But who knows? 3 days. Honestly, look, I might start going live every day, like on some, like I do this another segment where I'm talking about like current tech news. So it might be like tech news first take style. And if I could pull that off, that'll be dope, which I have a person I know I can pull that off with. But yeah, man, that's how I feel about the certs. Like, honestly, like I like them, but I also can get pricey. And I just know it's like all that game. Like, hey, like, cool. Like I always tell people, hey, get an entry level cloud cert, have some networking fundamentals. You don't have to get Network Plus. At least if you know about the stuff in Network Plus, good enough for me. And get you an entry level cloud cert. I have my little brother right now. He's a freshman in college working on a cloud practitioner because I want him to do the labs, do it. And I want him to understand the cloud. And if he likes it, he'll go that much deeper, and you know, it's fine. To me, I substitute A plus with a cloud surf because I feel like
they're about the same.
Yeah, but I think it's actually just more beneficial. Honestly, at this point, you know how many security jobs say, like, you know, oh, must know of AWS, GCP, or whatever. And like for me, for example, when I brought up that instance, like they ask me that in interviews all the time. It's like, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, because a lot of people don't even have their environment stood up right. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think the chase of certs is, you know, it's great. It's just that, like you said, sometimes you can talk to people and you're like, wow, you've got 18 different certs and you're talking about, you know, trying to use RDP on a Linux box. Like, that's command line only. Like, it's sometimes, yeah, you can really, really tell. But there's nothing bad about chasing certs because some people are lifelong learners and that's what they prefer to do.
Right. And here goes another question for you right here. Earlier, this person said, is this a career that I can transition to from being an IT help desk technician?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Yeah. Mostly because in IT help desk, you really learn the fundamentals of IT. And I think a lot of times, not that you can't do it, right? Because there's tons of people that, like pen testing, for example, a lot of people want to be penetration testers. And, you know, you can absolutely do that. You don't have to start at help desk. And I know I said cloud support isn't entry level. I don't think it is, but you don't have to start at help desk to get to cloud support. You could start at cloud support. As long as you can show your proficiency on understanding the basic levels of IT. Because there are some things in IT that it doesn't matter what the specialization is. They are the same. They they cross all boundaries. And so, you know, if you like help desk, you can absolutely transition into cloud support engineering. They even have cloud support associate. I don't really know how people get that one. I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know much about that role. It's the same, though. So.
Right. We got another one. They got here late. We're getting a CompTIA A plus and CompTIA Network Plus certificate. I'm tongue-tied because I'm trying to read too fast. It come to your Network Plus certification and be suitable to get into AWS. We kind of talked about this already. I'm going to say no. Short answer is no. It's not because you got the certs, but if that's all you got, then what value do you, you know, present to the company you're trying to go to? Now, if you've got some skills and you couple that with understanding, like she's been talking about earlier, like EC2 instances, you didn't stood up 50 instances and you got a whole network and you know how to do this and that and you got all these projects, you got a portfolio on GitHub, by all means, yes, that's all you need. Like that's and that's the thing too. If you really want to know the game, find a person like her and reach out to her and say, hey, what would I have to like no BS, what would I have to know to do a role like this? And then she tell you and then you go replicate that in a project. You might not get every role you interview for, but they're going to be impressed. And you're going to land something because you know what you need to know to do the role and you can talk about it.
Right. Yeah. It's not like super difficult. It's just a different layer just because people have, they have, it's custom setups. So it's not your setup, it's their setup. And so you have to get the information from them to help them fix this issue.
Right. We got another one. They say, what would you say is a key pathway that might help lead eventually to a cloud support role? I know you kind of answered that already because I mean, everybody's pathway is different. It's probably some people who've never even been in tech that decide to transition into doing cloud support engineering. So for you, what would you say since this is something you do every day?
I would say, again, the basics of IT, they are so, so important. As far as roles go, I mean, you could hop right into cloud support engineer, maybe cloud support associate. Like I said, I don't know much about that one, but I know I work with people with that title and we do the exact same work. So I think they're fresh college grads. I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't really ask. But, you know, if you've got like a sysadmin job or you want to be a sysadmin or, You've got your, you know, help desk, something that can show that you understand IT at the very, very basic level.
Mm-hmm. We got this one, and we kind of already answered this one. Like, hey, skills and projects. And the way you learn the skills is go look up some cloud roles and figure out what skills that they're asking for stick out within like 5 to 10 roles. Learn those on your own, then work on some projects. Come back to the drawing board, network, and see what you can get. Mm-hmm. With that, that's within like entry level. Mid and senior might be out of reach for you because that's just mid and senior, but try to find some entry level. Entry level, I normally say 0 to 2, sometimes 0 to 3. Really depends.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely get into cloud with no experience. Like, I didn't have cloud experience before I got my job. All of my experience, I technically worked in private cloud mostly. So I guess I did have cloud experience, but I didn't have public cloud experience, which public cloud and private cloud, completely different animals, not even of the same species. For the concept is the same, but
we might have to bring you on for a different stream to actually talk about that. Okay. We got another question right here. Hey, say my employer will pay for either my 4-year degree in cloud or certifications A+, Network Plus, yada yada yada. Assuming either path will take the same amount of time, which one would you recommend? I'm going to say approach this with some caution. Read the fine print of saying, hey, if they pay for my school, how long do I have to stay here? Or do I have to pay this money back? That's I'm throwing out there in the beginning because that's how that normally works. Yeah, they'll pay for it, but you got to stay here the next couple of years. And, you know, your salary might not represent the skills that you just learned. So that's why I'm saying that. So pay attention to that. But for your degree in cloud, I mean, where are you going? WGU? Like, and this might be another video topic that I made. It was like, have schools finally migrated to cloud degrees just for cloud? Like, when I was coming up, like, in November will make 10 years since I've had my since I've been graduated from undergrad. So I went into school, 13 years ago. 13 years ago in September, I went into college. And for computer stuff, for CIS or computer science, it's only two. So I am interested in like what other majors are out there. So I may do that for the people that are watching because everyone doesn't know how to decipher the thing. But what would you recommend this gentleman to do?
So, you know, this is going to be a very unpopular one, but I'm going to 100% say the degree. Because off rip, there's a lot of doors that can get open because of that piece of paper. Like, literally, like, I'm finishing up mine. I had some stuff that was going on in my life, but that degree is way, way powerful. There are companies that will just give you a chance because you have the degree. The certifications are great. And the certifications you can get in tandem with the degree. And like you said, if you go to WGU, you can get them while you're getting a degree, right? But they're like, it really depends, right? Because say, for example, you want to go for a job that is in a particular sector. That sector might require a degree. Your offer may be contingent upon you having that degree. So I think degrees are super important. A lot of people don't think degrees mean that much. I think they hold a lot of weight. I really, really think they do. And, you know, people get passed up for management positions because they don't have a degree. And it's like, well, you've been working here for 20, 30 years and you can't get into management. And they tell you, you don't have this degree. And so you feel like, what?
Hold on, let me hit it for you.
What?
Yeah. What? Yeah. Get the degree. Please get the degree. So many doors can open in different sectors.
Right. And I'll touch on this. That's a person that actually does have a master's, right? She's right, because now when it comes to negotiations or I'm talking to whoever, they're like, oh, okay, well, your experience checks out, your education checks out. We have no problem paying you the number you asked for. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons. That's in the back end of why it happens. That's why I could either say I want to remain an IC, which stands for individual contributor, or I'm going to go management. I can do either or. Mm-hmm. And I also was strategic and I didn't pigeonhole myself to just say, okay, I'm going to get me a cybersecurity master's. I got my master's in IT technology management simply because that is pretty much more widespread. It's not just fixated on one thing. And I learned many different things. And that's also, I've made this video before, especially in my like earlier podcast episodes, like I advocate for bachelor's degrees to be set up like master's degrees, because in master's degrees, you work on projects and you have classes that line up with stuff you would possibly do at work. And mm-hmm. bachelor's, you don't. They just give you some crap, sometimes outdated, and you learning some crap that you don't know the next semester. And it's not beneficial for you. But the way that grad school, to me, perfect. Like my projects, the things I have to do write-ups on, perfect. I have the books there behind me. I do some of that stuff all the time.
Yeah. Degree will open the doors for you, even if it's in the long run. There's a lot of people that'll say, I don't have a degree and I get paid $500,000 mm-hmm. a year. And it's like, congratulations. There are people out here right now getting rejections because they're like, I love your experience, but you don't have a degree.
Yeah. And to that point, I tell people, hey, you have to be proactive in your job search, because if you can get to the recruiter first before you get that rejection, you can possibly get the interview. Like, and quick story before I go to this next question, it's like for me, and it's also funny too, sometimes you got a rejection and it just came, it don't even mean you was rejected from the role, because like I applied to a role for Target last year. They sent me a rejection in November, and 2 weeks later, the HR recruiter reaching out to me about like the interview process, like, hey, you know, you're available when you want to talk. So that's also something too, like, just because you got rejected don't mean you got rejected. This go for jobs, it's also go for dating. This person right here says, which do you prefer and why? Docker, Kubernetes, or Jenkins? I'm washed right now until I get back real technical.
I would say Docker, but it's only because I use it at home for random stuff. I don't really use it at work because I don't work. I don't work continuous delivery or whatever it's called. Continuous integration, continuous delivery. I don't. What is it called? Something like that. I don't work that. I don't work with these things, but I use Docker at home for various projects and labs that I set up for myself. I constantly build it up and tear it down all the time. That's a daily thing for me.
Dope. Yeah, I'm just going to agree with what she said. Stevenson Legenta says, do you have a particular title you want to accomplish in your IT journey? I don't know if that's for you or me. I'll go first and I'll let you go because I already had this concise. I'm backing out of doing lead and management stuff because I'm going back to being an IC, because I want to be more technical because I know I can manage. It's easy. So after that, I do want to go to management and then director level. Do I want to go C-suite level? Who knows? I also have my own company, so I also plan to do stuff within that as well. So I'll probably say for someone else, the minimum would be director level. Then after that, if I go C-suite or board of directors, hey, will I? Cool. I could do that within the next 3 to 5 years if I want to, just based off experience and name recognition alone. But what about you?
So I kind of really enjoy the idea of being an IC, basically. So right now, I'm like, my long-term goal is digital forensics. I had a mentor. She is an amazing woman. She got her PhD in cyber defense. Shout out to Fran. I found her, I got connected with her through Blacks in Cyber, actually.
Okay. That made me want to use the old Kevin Samuel sounds of, I got a PhD.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, she's an amazing, amazing woman. And like, it really, like, she showed me so much about forensics and stuff like that. And so, my long-term goal is forensics, whether that has to do with the cloud, whether it doesn't have to do with the cloud. We'll find out on the next episode of Dragon Ball Z. But like, yeah, I mean, I just really like, I don't know, I like the deep dive of stuff. And I like, yeah, so somewhere in forensics, like I said, I like the idea of being an individual contributor. But, you know, maybe things will change. Maybe I'll decide like, oh, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm bored now. Let me try to do management. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And don't worry. I'm glad you said that. I got something for you. Since you said that, I got something for you. Tech Xavier, my guy. Are there any cloud specializations that you think will take off in the next few years? Something that may not even be part of a cert program currently. That's more for you then, because I don't know. Well, technically I do. I mean, technically it's a part of the cloud. And you could tell me this because you work in kind of a little bit of the area. But I would assume smart home devices, IoT, those things, I see that market share growing within the next 5 years. I have to do a project on this in grad school, which is why I big up grad school. I see that market getting a lot of traction very soon and becoming its own thing where they say, hey, you know, we need these people to support IoT. Because I know last year Ring was hacked and like people was like answering people's like doorbells and all type of crap. Like, so that's just one part of it. That's not even talking about, you know, you got light switches now, you got Alexa was always listening. What else do you have? Pretty much everything, smart doors, like all these different crap. Like, I'm sending you something that's pretty cool. I talked to a company last year. They have a smart city and they're also working on autonomous vehicles, and it's dope. So also one of the things that, like I said, that went to the grad school project I talked about. So I see those things, smart cities and all those concepts becoming something that could be a specialization. And I feel like, well, not feel like, I know you need the cloud for that to run. So I'm going to say IoT for sure.
Okay. I'm definitely going to say AI, ML, artificial intelligence, and machine learning.
Shout out to ChatGPT.
Yeah. Mostly because I think
sensational.
There's a lot happening in that field. And I think the tool is very powerful. You know, once they work out the kinks and whatever's going on in, you know, when you talked about how they asked the ChatGPT to find some Black people that did whatever for Black History Month, that made me think about the fact that I've seen constant articles and stuff about the fact that, you know, there's no diversity in the data sets for the machine learning and the AI. So, you know, once they get over the hurdle of adding diversity, and that includes people that can, you know, kind of get information or present them with data sets that have better information, then it'll be very, very powerful. I think it'll be super, super popular, mostly because a lot of companies are trying to do their own thing. Like, they're, yeah. I think I was watching a documentary or something on a company that's trying to do space exploration to be able to do mining or something. I laughed at it, but I was like, you know?
I feel like we the generation that's going to live through Independence Day.
Yeah, I mean, but like, maybe, you know, if they get NASA, for example, is doing amazing things. Like, I know I have a Twitter and I know I mostly retweet NASA stuff, even though I work in tech, but like,
NASA is doing awesome stuff. To me, NASA is a tech company, though. It takes tech to do what they do. So,
right, exactly. And they're doing great, great things. Great things.
Afri P says, can you speak on OpenStack?
I absolutely cannot, unfortunately. No, I can't. Sorry.
I can't speak on either, man. I've been doing, like, look, hey, check out the Patreon if you want to see what I've been doing, like, the last year. I got another video I'm going to edit tonight. So you can see, like, how much, not out of the loop, but, like, I'm like a boxer who hadn't fought in, like, a year. That's just going to be me. Shout out to Ari for the super chat. Let's see. I'm in tech sales, but looking to get into data analytics. Any advice? Shout out. So Brian Kent, I would say follow my guy Jamar Gale on LinkedIn. He's actually chronicled his data analytics journey for a while, and he's put out stuff like what helped him learn and how they learn stuff in data analytics. But the process doesn't change. Figure out what you want to do in data analytics, study it, learn the skills, build out things that that job that you would want to do that they do in data analytics. I'm not going to lie. A lot of the stuff I do in my job right now is data analytics, and I hate it. 1,000% hate it. I'm surprised they don't watch my YouTube and ask me, hey, you said yesterday on your live stream you hate this job. Say it all the time. I hate it. Emmanuel B says, what cert to get to renew CYSA? That's not CompTIA. I would think you have to get a CompTIA certification to renew the CYSA. Could be wrong.
I think CompTIA has that information on their website too. Certs that are eligible to give you the, what is it called? Units?
CEUs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Continue education.
I'm going to get, unless you're in the government, Emmanuel B, don't worry about it. Because look, all my stuff expired. But you know what? Still on the resume though. Let's see if we got any more questions. All right, somebody spamming the chat. I got to get some more moderators so y'all can get Philippe-L out of here. Okay, we already answered that, FSMH, when it comes to Azure versus AWS. Let's see. Let's see. I don't have none of my moderators in the chat. I'm going to give, hey, if you want to be a moderator, I want you to comment right now. I want to be a moderator, and I'll make you a moderator. Actually, let me put this dude right here. All right. I hate that person. I want Pansy to the chat. But yeah. Now, if you want to be a moderator, let me know. I'll make you a moderator. That way, the next chat, if he shows up, you get him out of here. Appreciate Black Dove for this super chat, man. Appreciate that. Okay, Jordan Russell, I got you. I got you. Hang on. Let me go to, I can make you a moderator right now. Look, I'm not going to forget it. All right, you a moderator, fam. Appreciate you for saying that.
Thank you, Jordan.
Let me go. Hold on, TL, want to be a moderator too. Hey, appreciate y'all. Because like I said, we are in the conversation, so I really was not looking at the chat. It'll tell me new comments, but okay, just me. What are some sensible paths for IAM? Interesting.
That's a good one.
It's a good question. So I have an episode with JK Swopes, and we talked about IAM. And we talked about how at the center of everything, IAM is critical because most of the time, that is what's used to breach and cause all these issues in every organization. Like misconfigurations. Like I just went live about LastPass and why I had to ditch them because of the, you know, negligence that they're doing. Like, you know, not notifying companies, hey, you've been a member with us for a long time, but you need to update your password because you're using an outdated encryption method. Like things like that. I typically tell people that you can learn about identity and access management for one. Do things like AWS or Azure because that's what they got, Azure, Identity Access Management. So that's one part. Then you also have companies that do different things for Identity Access Management. For example, I'll say something like SailPoint. Go research and learn about SailPoint. You know, you can learn about that and then, hey, let's spit it out. Like we talk about projects and see where you can go from there. So that's what I would say. I'm not the guru on identity and access management. You check out my guy, JK Swopes. He's always doing stuff on Ping Federate, especially when it comes to identity and access management. So I will let Miosha take the lead right here.
I would honestly say, so my job, IAM is an important part of the job, I guess, depending upon what's going on. But I couldn't really tell you how to get into IAM, mostly because most of the things I do is troubleshooting IAM. Like, what, why this is not working and it says access denied and how do we fix it? So I don't really know how you can get into that. I know that there's an IAM team where I work, but a lot of times they send stuff to us because the customer is like, I can't, you know, I've got the right permissions. They verified it. So our job as a cloud support engineer is to be the expert in whatever your service is, not like a whole expert of everything. And so they're like, IAM looks good, but they can't export whatever from an EC2 instance to S3, right? So I can't speak much on IAM, mostly because I do a lot of troubleshooting with IAM and around it. So I don't know how you can get straight into it.
Yeah, definitely. And my guy Tech Xavier just asked me, what am I using? Hello, LastPass. I'm using Dashlane. On their homepage, say, hey, we never been hacked. So that was good enough for me. Now, I was telling my guy, Eric, I was like, we'll see how good they are, since now they're going to get more attention since LastPass and pretty much messed up the whole year. You can try 1Password, Bitwarden, but I like Dashlane. It was easy for me to export my passwords and put them into LastPass. Speaking of, somebody from Dashlane, if you're watching this, I'm looking for that sponsorship. You know what I'm saying? I'm always shooting my shots. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't shoot. Remember that, fellas. That go in life. If it's a chick you've been thinking about right now, go ahead and shoot that shot. last question right here. We're going to the last question. Brian Will says, what is a good entry point for cloud support, cert, experience, etc.? I'll let you handle that. I'll let you handle that. And I'm going to put you on solo so they can see you tell them.
Okay. I think I already did talk about it, but definitely just working on the core foundations of IT, knowing your networking, knowing your ports and protocols, knowing how things communicate, knowing if something is supposed to communicate in a way. And as far as certs go, I don't necessarily think certs can help you get a cloud support position. But if you can use certs to help, you know, get your knowledge up there, absolutely. As far as experience goes for cloud support, I guess it depends on the level that you're applying to, but it's really important to just have that core foundational knowledge of just IT in general, just what things do, how they're supposed to work, being able to ask good questions, being able to observe how people configure their environment and understanding how their environment works. I know a lot of people will say labs and stuff like that. Cloud support is a lot different. Unless you're building labs to specifically break stuff, which I've done multiple times. I do it every single day. I've got my own disaster recovery stuff failing by design. But I think labbing can help you get familiar with the services and familiarize you with the environment and just working in the cloud. But I don't think building up a lab is necessarily going to help you with cloud support unless you specifically have things in that lab that do not work. Like you have an instance that is not, you know, you can't RDP to it, or you have an instance that does not have a certain service on it and you're trying to figure out how to use a particular program or something to get it there. You have an instance that doesn't have the most recent Windows updates and you're testing it against like something like Inspector or whatever, guard duty or whatever, right? To be able to see what vulnerabilities are in the environment. So, yeah, I think certs, it really depends, and experience just kind of, I think on-prem really helps you a lot with working in the cloud.
Yeah, man. And I agree with her. She's 100% right. Nothing really changes when it comes to what we talked about kind of like the last one. It's almost going on with an hour and a half now. Like, nothing changes. With her, like I said, if you do want to get into a cloud support role, reach out to cloud support engineers and ask them. That way you can get 5-10 responses and see what they say, because it's a different role. So, like, for example, how I always work, I had someone today, we were having a consultation, and they were interested in, I'll show them some of the roles in cybersecurity that are a little bit non-technical, but then we came across something in DeepWatch, like a customer success manager, and there's interest that they work in higher education as an admin assistant. I said, man, you got a lot of transferable skills for this. But I sent them to somebody that deals with more non-technical people than I do. And that's typically what I do. If I'm not the person that I know you need, I'll send you to that person. So I'll never just say whatever I want to say just to get your money, because I'm like, my goal is to help you get a job. Now, whether if I'm just a starting point, that's good enough for me, and then I'll send you where you need to go, because I trust the people that I refer people to. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm finna start sending everybody to Miosha way. You know, she might as well get a book in sight and tell these people to start reaching out to her. But he says, Robert Dobie says, I heard you mention Blacks in Cyber. What are some other groups that you can work with to help in the industry? That's a good question. I'll be doing a lot more talks and things of that nature this year. So for me, I don't know all the groups yet. Cyber Jutsu is one, I think, especially for women. It could be for men and women, but Cyber Jutsu is one they're definitely trying to help people get into cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. He said Blacks in Cyber. I thought it was like a Black in Tech. And there's a couple of other ones out here. Also, y'all guys right now, listen, Afrotech is supposed to be in Austin again this year. I want to see y'all all there. I want to see Miosha there, because she went there this year. So we're trying to make this year's bigger than last year's, and it was a blast. I'm going again. Mm-hmm. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I'm going to give you guys, like, especially if you're on the East Coast time, that's like 8:44, almost 9 o'clock. But this has been a great live showing. Somebody asked me earlier, do I do this every Monday? I do not. She picked the Monday, so we did it a Monday. So the podcast part could be whatever day, but the tech news thing will at least be a Wednesday or a Thursday, sometimes before that. It just depends on how spicy or how good the news is from the previous week or the current week. And it just depends on my schedule. Mm-hmm. But Miosha, do you want to leave anybody but any last words? Like, you know, where can they follow you or how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I just want to add two things. With regards to the groups in cyber or groups. So for women, there's Women in Tech International, WITI, and there's WESIS, Women in Cybersecurity. And they both have excellent programs that can help you get certs or get internships or compete in CTFs and stuff like that. I've done it with WESIS. I've done it with WITI. And they're both really, really good groups. And people can find me on Twitter at, what is my Twitter? Security Barb.
I tried to tag you earlier and typed in Certified Barb. The only person that came up was Lise. Shout out to Certified Curls.
I think it's Security Barb on Twitter. I don't tweet a lot. I kind of retweet a lot of stuff from NASA. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Sometimes I'll retweet random things that I see that are tech related, but I don't really engage in conversation on Twitter. I do block people first, starting drama. I don't like to see it. So that's where you can find me on Twitter, and just reach out and ask some questions or something like that. Or LinkedIn, if you can find it. I think my LinkedIn might be private. I'm not too sure. So.
I forgot one more, because he was talking about like industry. So I'm shout out to Women in Linux, shout out to Tam. We definitely did a, like, if you want to talk about being motivated, Tam is super dope, especially with the stuff she's working on. So shout out to Tam. She's been in chat. I appreciate everything. If you are one of our listeners right now, please make sure you leave us a review, leave us a comment on the podcast and follow it. We got a lot of heat schedule coming up for y'all. And if you're right now watching on YouTube, please leave a like. Also, comment on the video. Tell us what you liked about it, what you took away from the video, or some things maybe you wish we would have covered. But appreciate everybody for rocking with me. It's your boy, HD. Like I always say, man, let's stay textual. I'm out. Until the next time, y'all see me. One time for the one time.